Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. MAP series of podcasts produced in conjunction with MAP 2020, The Further We Roll, The More We Gain, our multi-form project that commemorates and critically examines the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, continues with filmmaker, singer, and educator Gaji Juni Fox, who lives in the Mohawk community at Akwesasne in upstate New York. Gaji Juni's most recent film, Without a Whisper, reveals the untold story of how indigenous women have held political power on this continent for centuries and how they influenced the early suffragists in their fight for freedom and equality. So, tell us a bit about where you are.
My name is Gaji Juni Fox. I'm Bear Clan, and I live in the Akwesasne Mohawk Territories, which is up in northern New York, straddling the Canadian border. I am a filmmaker, I'm an educator, I'm an artist, and I've been doing work in my community for many years.
And did you grow up in this area?
Yeah, I grew up here. My family all lives really close by. We have a really large family. And so it's good that we're always connected with each other. I have many brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews and kids and grandkids. And then just connected with everybody in the community.
Wow, that must be not only generally just a rewarding and rich experience, but especially during these times to have those connections and your family around you.
Yeah, it's nice.
So it's part of the Six Nations territory, is that right?
Yeah, well, this territory that we live on is Ganyangahaga. We're the people of the Flint. I think mainstream knows us more as Mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're part of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which has six different nations, the Mohawks, Oneidas, Onondagas, Cayugas, Senecas, and Tuscaroras. And some people also know us as the Iroquois.
But what's the correct name for you?
For all of us together, united, we're the Haudenosaunee.
Okay.
Which means people of the Longhouse. And our land, our original territories, were most of New York State, and now I think we're down to less than 0.5% of our original territory. So we live on a small little territory right on the top of the state, right along the St. Lawrence River. And a border actually runs through our community.
Right, so you have members of your community on each side of the Canadian and U.S. border.
Yeah, we say northern and southern part of our community since we were here before the border.
Right, yes. Yeah. The border came over you. You did not go over
That's
the border.
Right.
And tell me, what did you think about the recent Supreme Court decision regarding Oklahoma? Does that have any sort of impact upon you in your territory or your thinking as a Native American?
I'm hoping that it has implications for all the nations across what's now called the United States, because every area that's here was originally inhabited by some nation, and the land was taken. So I thought that was good news. We'll see where it goes.
So let's talk a little bit about your recent film, Without a Whisper, which we curated and included as a part of MAP 2020. It tells the story of
how Indigenous women were influential in the suffragette movement and how the teachings and the workings of your people were really integral to the shaping of a lot of the thinking around the suffragette movement. And I look forward to presenting that at some point in Dallas when we are able to gather again. But in the meantime, maybe you can talk a little bit about what inspired you to make the film. And for people who don't know, you know, tell us about the film itself.
I think I was inspired to make the film because I'm a teacher. And so I teach in a high school close by to here at Salmon River Central School. It's a public school that has a high population of Native students. So I see the history that they're taught, like, in the classroom. And it's always very one-sided. A lot of times it's not very inclusionary of other histories. So when I heard Sally Roche Wagner talk about this topic, like, I think it's been 10 or 15 years ago that for the first time I heard her talk about how Haudenosaunee women influenced the women's rights movement, I was really intrigued by it because I hadn't really thought about it even myself. So with 2020 being the 100th anniversary, I thought it was the right time to share this story and to shed light on a history that people don't know about.
You finished your final cut, right? And you're...
Yep.
And have you screened the film yet? It seems like right when you were getting ready to screen in places, it was when COVID broke.
Yeah. We were supposed to do, like, the March 2020, and we had a screening that was going to be in Kansas. We had another one that was going to be at the Seneca Cultural Center in Gananoagon, and all of them have either been postponed or they might go virtual. But we are having our world premiere of the film at Woods Hole Film Festival. And that's going to be at the end of the month.
Oh, great. And, that's in Massachusetts. That's a great festival.
I'm excited. So that festival actually went virtual this year. So they've done a lot of work to change their format in order to be able to keep the festival going.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually, maybe it's kind of a cool thing because now anybody can go and see the premiere because it's virtual.
When is that?
So it's the end of the month. You can start purchasing tickets for the film on July 25th.
Just go to the Woods Hole Film Festival website and get your tickets.
You could buy a ticket and then watch it with your whole family. Have a little watch party with your family. And we're going to be doing a Zoom chat. And I'll have Louise and Sally, who are both in the film, as well as Kacha Esan, who was my co-producer, will be on that Zoom chat. So that's next Tuesday at 9 a.m. We're doing that. And then I'll post that to all of our social media so people can take a look at that. And so we have Without a Whisper Film on Facebook, on Instagram, and we also have a website, withoutawhisperfilm.com.
Okay, good. That's great.
So people can check that out. We also are in the Roxbury Film Festival, which I believe they're rescheduling for the fall.
Okay.
And then we've submitted to a bunch of others, so we're still waiting to hear, as the year goes on, to see what happens.
Right, right.
Yes.
So what is it you hope that people take away from this film, especially people who aren't Indigenous to the U.S.? What would be the hope there?
Well, there's a few things that I hope the takeaway from the film is that people really need to take a look at other perspectives in history, because what students get in school is usually really one-sided of how history took place, and it's usually from the kind of the colonizer's point of view. And it's good to look at the people that were also involved, like the Indigenous people here on this continent, like how they influence history. And oftentimes they're either written out or they're portrayed as the bad guy in history. So it's good to take different perspectives on it. And so this film, Without a Whisper, the title of it comes from Louise, from and she's a clan mother from here. When she was speaking, she was talking about how our grandmothers, although they had an influence on, the women's rights movement and a lot of those people that were involved in that, they were written out of history. And she says, without a whisper, like there's not a mention of them. So I'm hoping that this film will change that and then change the narrative and change the history on what people think when they think of the women's rights movement.
And for the listeners who aren't familiar with that history, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, this unknown history that's not been presented in the fuller form?
I guess first I'll talk about our culture and our history and our people. So for the Haudenosaunee, or some people know us as the Iroquois or the Six Nations, our people were a matrilineal society, so everything revolved around the women. So your clan, which was, I guess, would be comparable maybe to your last name from the Western point of view. So your clan came from the mother, and that was passed down to the children. And it was the women that were in charge of the agriculture and the food. They were in charge of, and also responsible for raising leaders. So raising young men that would be good leaders, and then selecting those ones that they think would be the best ones to lead the people. So it was up to the women to decide leadership. And they also had a place in leadership because they had to, they would select the chiefs, and then the clan mothers would be beside the chiefs. So they had like an equal responsibility. And I don't know, I really like to use the word power, but I like to use responsibility. They had a equal responsibility for caring for the people, the chiefs and the clan mothers. And this is much different than the Western model that came over to these lands. So when the European women came to this continent, they didn't have any political power. Once they got married, all of their possessions would belong to their husband, even their children. They had no say in politics, so they basically didn't have any rights. And then you look at the Haudenosaunee women, who were on an equal footing, and you might even think about it as even more respected because they were the life givers. They were the ones that passed on the clan and had a lot of responsibilities in the economy and also in politics. It was kind of like night and day. So you wonder, where did the idea for freedom and for looking for the right to vote and all of those things, where did they see that from? And you look at the Haudenosaunee, were all around them, all those early suffragettes that were in, you know, like the middle part of New York State, which was a hotbed for a lot of these actions that were taking place at that time.
I'm talking to you from Seattle, which is where I'm from. And my public education, we actually grew up with a good knowledge of what the local people here, the Chehalis and other groups, what their history was. And that was part of our Washington State education. And one thing was the role of the woman, actually, and the responsibility of the woman was also in the creation stories, if that's part of your heritage, too, if the woman is actually the principal energy in the creation.
Yeah, exactly. So for us, in our creation story, the first person that come here to the earth was Sky Woman. So Sky Woman came from the sky world, and she brought, you know, her teachings and her knowledge, and she came down here to this world, which at one time was a world made of water. And she created the earth on the top of a turtle's back, and she sang and she danced, and the earth expanded into what we have today. And, you know, there's a lot to the story, but there's just that, just even thinking about that, you know, in the creation story, that the woman was the one that was here first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you compare that to like the Christian model, where you have Adam and Eve is created from his rib, kind of like a secondary character, and she's put here to serve him. You know, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
And that's even part of the film. In the film, when you watch it, I decided to use animation as part of the way of telling the story. So we see the creation story and it's animated. And also we see the suffragettes and our women, and there's part of that that's animated because there are no pictures of that. And there's also no pictures of when we used to live in longhouses and, you know, and because that was so long ago.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different model, too, when you look at that. Like, the way that we used to live, we'd live in villages that were arranged by clans, and, you know, the clans passed down to the women. And in each longhouse, it would be extended family would live in that log house. Like, it would be a grandmother and a husband and then all of her daughters. And whoever their daughters would marry would move into their house.
So the sons moved out of the house and the daughters stayed with whoever they married.
That's right. So if you can imagine that, there would be no child abuse, there would be no wife abuse, and that was pretty much unheard of in our territories because they moved in with the woman's family, so they were always being watched over. And that's changed a lot, even in our community. In our community, we have programs like the Three Sisters and the Seven Dancers Coalition, and so we have these different programs in our community to help with domestic violence, which is ironic because we never had that before. Like, in history, we never had domestic violence until recent years or whatever that we started to see that more.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because of colonization, and I also think it's because we moved from living in extended families to living in nuclear families. So now we don't have our grandmothers and our aunties, like, watching out for us anymore. We're living more in a Western model.
So, tell us about your journey as a filmmaker.
I've been probably doing filmmaking for maybe 20 years or so. I started experimenting with film when I worked at the Akwesasne Freedom School, which is Mohawk Immersion School, a private school for children in our community to go and learn the language. So, in that school, everything's taught in a curriculum with our language and our culture and our history, and all of my own kids went there, so I taught there for a little while and did some work with films. And then I worked in the community doing smaller projects and short films for different agencies. Big film that I did was Under the Husk, and you can check that out online. I have a website for that too. It's called underthehuskfilm.com, and that was a 26-minute documentary about my daughter and her best friend going through their rites of passage ceremony, which was something that we were able to bring back to our community that had kind of gone dormant for a lot of years. So that was my first film, and that was funded by Vision Maker Media and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It came out in 2016. So that was kind of my breakout film. It premiered at Imaginative in Toronto, and then it, you know, hit the film circuit, and then it was shown on different PBS stations over the past couple of years. And then this film was another film that I worked on. I worked on this one for over 3 years. I just finished it. And it was also funded by Vision Maker Media and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And so its release is in 2020 this year.
And do you anticipate this will be shown on PBS?
I can't really say how it's going to be shown yet, but they definitely have the rights to show the film for the next 4 years because I got funding from them. So I'll be announcing that when they let me.
Good. In addition to being a filmmaker, as you said, you're a teacher.
Yeah. I've been teaching for over 20 years now, and I teach Native studies, I teach Native film, I teach traditional arts, and I have taught language as well. So I taught at the Akwesasne Freedom School for a while, and then now I've been teaching at Salmon River for many years, and doing like elective classes for our students to be able to have that opportunity to learn more about their own culture and history and art, and also to promote young people to be able to create their own films as well and to be able to tell their own stories.
The language and the culture, is this something that you grew up with in your house, or is this something that you went out and found, you know, on your own?
I grew up that way, so since I was little, I was raised that way with their cultures and with the culture and tradition. And my father is a traditional chief, and my mother is a faith keeper. So, yeah, I was fortunate in that way, that I was raised that way, and a lot of the youth in our community didn't have that opportunity. So by doing the classes, I hope that, you know, it exposes them more to be able to learn more about who they are.
Yeah, do you find that coming back more, the traditions and the history and your culture, is it becoming more known, and are people living more traditionally in some ways than in previous past decades?
We've held on to our language, we've held on to our ceremonies and our traditions, but it's been a smaller portion of our people that are hanging on to those. But I feel like there's been a renaissance in that over the past, I'd say maybe the past 10 years or more, that you're seeing it more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the youth, they have a pride in who they are, but a lot of them still don't know a lot about it. Like, they still need to learn more.
And what kind of opportunity do you sense for youth in your community? Do you feel like there's ways for them to be in life and be in the world and be supported living traditionally, you know, or is the colonization still so impactful that that's not even possible?
No, I think it's possible. And you see it, especially like with my last film that I did, Under the Husk, seeing that ceremony, something that had been dormant for so long, for us to have the power in our community to be able to revive that and bring that back. So I think some of our culture and tradition have gone to sleep, and it comes back to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible for it to come back to us.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it happen.
Yeah. You know, we're going through so much right now in this land we call the United States, and with calls for racial justice and COVID, and what's your thinking during this time?
I think, like with the COVID, I think it's given people the opportunity to slow down. I think that the Western model of doing things is always to be busy, always to be in a hurry. And I think that with everything that's going on, I think that people have really had the time to slow down. And I hope that it's given people the opportunity to look inside themselves. The other thing that I've seen, like even locally in our community, is more people are planting gardens.
Mm.
So we do have people in our community that, like myself, that already plant gardens, but now it's becoming even more prominent because people are starting to think about their food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when things are going on with the COVID, people would go into the grocery store and see, like, the shelves empty. And, like, a long time ago, that wouldn't have been an issue because everybody grew their own food.
Yeah.
But nowadays, we depend on the supermarkets and food that's being trucked from all over the place when we should be, you know, getting back to, like, doing our own food and being more sustainable. So I'm hoping some people are getting that out of it anyway. And
yeah.
As far as, like, with everything that's going on with racial injustice, I think light needs to be shed on that, and that's what that's done. You know, people are starting to wake up and see what's going on with social injustice, with different races, including, you know, Native American people.
What do you hope for your community?
I hope for our community that we can carry on with the knowledge of the land, the knowledge of our language, and to uphold all the things that our ancestors worked so hard to save for us. I know there's a lot of other nations across the Turtle Island that have lost their ceremonies and lost their language, and we're fortunate that we still have that, and I hope that we will be able to carry that forward and that it'll still be here when we're gone.
The MAP Radio Hour is produced by Matthew Horton. Theme song and logo by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening. And visit makeartwithpurpose.net to learn more about MAP, our projects, and to connect with us on social media.